Exploring how we can transform our communities in the 21st century with the support of St Ives Chambers, RHE Global and Me Learning. Welcome. This is the Community Safety Podcast with your host, Jim Nixon.
Today, the Community Safety Podcast turns its attention to the dangers of open water swimming, particularly during our summer months. My guest lost her son when he drowned in a quarry when he was just 13 years of age. This is a very upsetting episode. Please take a listen to a snippet of today's episode.
If we can prevent one life from being lost, then this podcast was worth doing. If we can get one family to listen up, make a different choice, or teach their loved ones about the dangers, then, you know, the tears have been worth crying, you know. At the end of the day, I'll continue to keep doing what I'm doing, and I'll continue to keep trying to raise awareness as much as possible and in as many places as possible. More people die in water than fires every single year. More people die in water than in cycling-related incidents every single year, and around about 50% of the lives that we lose accidentally were people that never intended on getting wet.
It's now time for the Community Safety Podcast.
Welcome to the Community Safety Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Nixon, and I've been working in community safety for over 25 years. This podcast will explore how we can transform communities in the 21st century. I'm delighted to introduce today's guest as Becky Ramsey. In 2011, Becky lost her 13-year-old son Dylan while swimming in open water. Dylan did what a lot of young men do on hot summer's days. He went to cool down for what he thought would be an innocent swim. It cost him his life. Becky now dedicates her life to educating others around the dangers of open water swimming. Becky, welcome to the Community Safety Podcast. Thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest today.
Hi, you're very welcome.
Thank you. Becky, because this is a kind of a special episode, normally what I do with my guests is I sort of go into their background, but I wanted this episode to be more about Dylan as well. So rather than sort of going into your background, would you tell me about Dylan and what he was like growing up prior to his death?
Yeah, Dylan was an amazing young man, and I always start everything about Dylan with Dylan was an amazing young man. He was a high achiever. He was always destined to be somebody special. He reached his goals and milestones very early, from even preschool, from before he even started school. Dylan was a very people person. He loved family, he loved life, he loved friends, he loved just being out there in the big wide world and doing new things, exploring new places, learning about new things. One of Dylan's biggest passions probably was education and fitness, to be quite honest. He loved learning, he had a passion for learning, so he loved to read. He would literally get lost in a book, and he would just literally lose himself. Like we lose ourselves in films, Dylan would lose himself in a book, and like literally 2-3 days later, the book would be finished and he'd be wanting the next one. He loved music of all genres, right from your Eminem, Bon Jovi, Aerosmith. He had a real eclectic music taste, loved anything. He loved family time, you know, more than anything. He loved being with his family and just spending time with mum, dad, siblings. He never really wanted much. He never really asked for anything. He was always content with everything that he had. He never really asked for any more. He never wanted anything. He was just, you know what? He was just a son that I was so proud of. And he made me proud every single day. I told him every single day how proud I was of him and how much I loved him. And that's one thing that I can hold on to, is that I know that he knows, or he knew that he was loved. I never have to question that.
So he sounds like an absolutely incredible young man that had everything to live for, really. You know, a fantastic family. He clearly was doing really well academically, and I think it's fair to say he was going to go on to great things.
Yeah, I mean, his PE teacher spoke at his funeral, and one of the things he said was that he wouldn't have been surprised to see him in the Olympics. And obviously with the Olympics being on now, Dylan would have been 23 now, and I sit and wonder, would it have been this year? Would you have potentially reached your fitness goals this year? Because quite honestly, nobody really knows what he wanted to do. He had talk of wanting to be an architect or, a lawyer, these big high-class jobs. I think, could this have been the year that Dylan Ramsey was at the Olympics? Sometimes it's the things that he didn't do that hurts as much as the things and the memories that we did get to make, sadly.
What sort of discipline do you think he would have gone on with the Olympics, knowing your son as you did? What was his sort of favourite kind of event? What do you think he would have excelled in?
It's really hard to say because he excelled in quite a lot. But I think he really loved track events. So I think he potentially would have done maybe 100 metres or even the 1500 metres. And then he really loved and he excelled at the throwing events. So he was really good at school at shot put, discus, javelin, all that kind of thing. Dylan was like athlete of his school 2 years in a row. And basically his school kind of... So I'm sure lots of schools out there do it, but his school basically, they had sports day, and then the best at the school get picked out and they go against the best at other schools. And the most events that you could be picked out for this thing was like 3 events every year. And Dylan got picked out for 3 events both years and won 5 out of the 6 events. So that just shows you really how top of his game he really was. He wasn't just athlete of his school. He was potentially athlete of the whole area. You know, he competed against people of his age and beat them. The only one thing that he didn't win in these 6 events was a relay race. And I often said to him that, you know, one man can't be responsible for a 4-man race. And he did well to pull it back to second, to be fair.
So it sounds like to me, if I was going to pick one event out of the Olympics based on what you've told me, I'd say he was probably a budding decathlete. Based on what you said. You're talking 100 metres, 1500 metres, throwing events. You know what, I reckon he could have been our next Daley Thompson.
He very well could have been. his teacher really had, his PE teacher really had high aspirations for him and really felt that he would go in places where he used to ring me up and beg me to ask him to be in rugby team because he were a really big lad and, you know, the school needed him on the team. But it wasn't something that interested Dylan rugby. He were more free running or athletics, like I say, or... backflipping, jumping around, you know, off bus stops and front flipping and everything else that young teenagers do.
Absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible to hear the type of, the lad that he was that you were absolutely proud of. Clearly an intelligent lad, clearly a lad with, common sense. So, moving on to the story, really, tell me about that terrible day. When Dylan, obviously, you found out that Dylan obviously had come into some difficulty and obviously passed away.
Yeah, so Dylan was really clever and he did have a lot of common sense. You know, if he had lots of friends and different groups of friends, and if any of them was up to like no good or anything, he'd just move on to the next group. He didn't want to be involved in anything that he shouldn't be involved in, you know, drinking, smoking, the things that teenagers get up to when the parents aren't about. Sadly, that day, it was a red hot day. Dylan, he rang a few friends to see what they was up to. They was all up to different things. Planned on meeting him later on in the day. He was with two friends when he was trying to arrange his day, and basically between the three of them, they decided that it'd be a good idea to go to the local quarry to cool down. I wasn't at home at the time. I was at a football match with one of my other children. And the first I knew about it was when I got a phone call from a lady who told me she was with my husband. I'll be quite honest with you, I thought that she was potentially going to tell me that she was seeing my husband or having an affair, or it was just very strange that a lady was ringing me to tell me that she was with my husband. When it did come out what she'd called me for, it was a police officer, and basically she was ringing me to say that there'd been an accident up at Hilltop Quarry and I needed to get home as quickly as possible. I was at the football match with my mum and my stepdad, and we ran to the car to try and get to the quarry as quickly as possible. We was actually at like a police headquarters. That's where the football match was that was going on. And I remember my mum asking if we could have a police escort to go to the quarry. And we were told basically, look, you're going to get there a lot quicker if you just go. You know, by the time we've sorted things out, you'd just be quicker going. So off we went, driving pretty erratically, not really thinking about other cars on the road or anything really. I just remember thinking I needed to get to Dylan as quickly as possible, but I didn't really know why. We were driving, like I say, pretty erratically, and we ended up being followed by a police officer, and he was trying to pull us over, basically, for our driving, while my mum was driving. And I remember screaming at my mum and just saying to her, just ignore him, mum. Just please get to the quarry. I just got a bad feeling. I need you just to get to the quarry.
Yeah.
Anyway, we ended up being a little bit trapped in, would you say, boxed in at some traffic lights, and the police officer was behind us, and he quickly got out of his car. I suppose he was going to tell my mum off. Before he had a chance to even speak to my mum, I was in his vehicle, and I just said to him,
take your time, Becky, take your time.
I just said, the lad that's on your radio, he's my little boy. I said, you need to get me there as quickly as possible. I remember getting into the car, and even at this point, I still thought Dylan must have fallen from a height. I thought I was going to a broken bone. The closer we got there, I just held my head in my hands and I just begged for Dylan to be alright. But the closer we got there, the more I could hear over the radio. We got to being about a mile and a half away, maybe a mile, and I remember hearing code 1 or code 9 on the police radio. Now, I didn't know what that meant at that time, but the police officer went deadly silent. I knew it wasn't good. I looked over at his speedometer and we was doing about 100 miles an hour in a 40. And I thought, this isn't good. I remember we pulled up at the quarry and it was like something out of a film. The whole village was out. There was police everywhere, ambulance, black cars, black vans. I probably should have known when I seen those black vehicles, but I didn't. I seen my husband. and he screamed to me the words that no mother ever wants to hear. He said he's dead. I couldn't comprehend what he was saying. I couldn't take it in. I'd say I screamed, but it wasn't a scream. It was a noise that came out of my mouth. It were a howl, like an animal sound. That's the only way I could describe it. I was screaming for my baby. I've never heard that noise before. I've never heard it since. I collapsed for a couple of minutes on the floor, and when I came round, I think that's when I was told that he'd been in the water. So the ambulance was still there at this point, and Dylan's still in the back of the ambulance at the top of the quarry at this point. And I screamed that, just let me be with my baby, let me hold his hand, let me take him to hospital, let me fix him, let me do anything and everything that I possibly can as a mum. Sadly, I was told no. I was told I wasn't allowed to go in the ambulance. And I was kind of distracted by some police officers. Whilst I was distracted by these police officers, the ambulance went a different way out. So I'll never know if hearing my voice would have made a difference. I'll never know if I could have willed those ambulance people into doing more. I'll never know if me being there would have been enough to make him come round. I later found out that Dylan had only been in the water for 20 minutes in total, and he'd only been underwater for 3 minutes in total. So even more so now, I think, would hearing my voice have made a difference that day? And I know some of your listeners will probably think that's a really ridiculous thing to think. But you see it in films all the time. And it does happen. You know? Maybe I could have made them do more. Maybe I could have demanded that they do more. Maybe I could have demanded that they took him to the hospital and worked on him at the hospital, because they didn't really do that much at the side of the water. It was the worst day in my whole life.
Absolutely devastating. And I mean, I know what you're saying there, Becky, and it's very easy for us to sort of talk about hindsight, but yeah, you know, I'm sure the emergency services did what they could on the day, and we'll never know, I suppose, whether or not you being there would have made that difference or not. You know, we'll never know that, but you know, it's just a tragic accident, and I think that's why we, you know, in the work that you're doing now, is that we try and prevent more, you know, more people and more raise more awareness about what is going on with young people that are venturing into open water, and we try and raise more awareness around it and save more lives. Had he gone into the water with anyone else, or was he on his own?
He'd gone into the water basically with two friends. Dylan was the youngest of the three, but probably the fittest, if I'm being honest. He went in with a 19-year-old and a 15-year-old. They were two brothers. When Dylan actually got into difficulty and shout for help three times. There was a Polish family that had come to the quarry to go diving on that day, and when they seen Dylan shouting for help, the language barrier, they thought he was shouting hello, so they leant over and started waving at him. And when they realised that he was actually in trouble, the two, three men stripped the clothes off and ran down to the water. And this is how I can be so sure that it was only a couple of minutes that he was underwater. They stripped the clothes off and he was in. And they pulled Dylan out, you know, with, and Dylan was still stood up.
Yeah. Becky, obviously we've already discussed, really, you know, Dylan was a young, fit, strong lad. You know, hot summer's day. Didn't clearly know the dangers because, it, you know, water, open water looks inviting. What are the dangers associated with open water, swimming and diving? What are the dangers that you've learnt now since Dylan's death?
So the dangers associated with open water, and there are many. So we've got, first and foremost, cold water shock, which is an involuntary reaction which you have no control over. You gasp for breath. I suppose how I describe this when I go and do school talks is when you turn your shower on and it's on the wrong set and it's on cold, and takes your breath away that little bit because it's freezing. Cold water shock is very much like that, but on a much bigger scale over your whole body. You basically would breathe in, big massive deep breath. As you breathe in, you then start to panic. If you've took a mouthful of water in at that point, you're then going to start splashing around, you're going to panic, you're going to hyperventilate, you potentially could have heart problems. All the time the cold water's sapping energy basically from your arteries and your arms and your legs and your hands and your feet would be the first to go, and that's basically because your body is trying to keep your internal organs working. On top of that, then you've got like the risk of underwater debris, undercurrents, poisonous chemicals, hazardous, anything could be under that water. Potentially, when we go out and we see these beautiful, inviting places, it looks beautiful on the surface, but quite often it's the things that's underneath that's going to cost you your life. For Dylan, he was a very clever young man, and I think being able to swim, that potentially gave him a bit of a false sense of security, as in, well, I can swim, so why would this be an issue to me? And you know, I wholeheartedly take my proportion of the blame where Dylan's death was concerned. As a parent, your listeners are going to be screaming out, this isn't all just about the government doing something or teachers doing something. You know this starts at home, parents should do something. You know, my response to that would be, how on earth can you teach something that you have not been taught yourself? And I'd never been taught about cold water shock. I'd never been taught about undercurrents being so strong that they can pull you down and they can carry you away in the blink of an eye. I think the most I probably knew about open water prior to Dylan losing his life was, one, it's a bit cold, and I think everybody thinks that anyway, you know, open water, it's going to be a bit cold. I think that's one thing that I thought about it, and I think that I just associated dirty water with, I associated open water with being dirty, so I would be like, you know, it's dirty, that water, don't go in it, kind of thing, and that's probably the only things that would have really entered my head. I wouldn't have thought about wearing protective clothing. I wouldn't have thought about buoyancy aids or anything that might protect his or save his life. I mean, I didn't know Dylan was going there that day, so it's not like I could have put something in place to do that anyway. But had he been taught about the dangers or risks associated with open water, he might have chosen either A, to not go in that water, or B, he might have chosen to go in the water but known what to do once he got into some kind of difficulty or into some kind of trouble. And three, his friends might have known how to help or rescue him, you know? All those three people that went in that water that day was uneducated. My son was the unfortunate one that lost his life, you know, and like many, many other people, every year we have hundreds and thousands of people going in the water and hundreds of thousands of people making it out of the water, but we also have hundreds of people that don't. And that's the awareness that needs raising around this matter, is that, yeah, you know, your luck might be in that day, But in the same vein, your luck might not be in that day and you could easily lose your life. Cold water shock as well is very sudden, as in quite often it's as soon as you jump into the water. So you jump in and quite often you don't resurface. So quite often you don't have chance to float to live or get on your back and control your breathing. Quite often you don't have chance to not panic. Quite often you don't have chance to put anything that you learn into practice. So that's why we have to take other things into account, such as if you're going to go in open water, acclimatise, splash your face with the water, put your feet in, you know, wet your hands, splash your neck, put it on the back of your, splash your face, put the water on the back of your neck. Most importantly, go with the adequate PPE, go with the adequate equipment on a wetsuit, a dry suit, buoyancy aids, you know, go to places that open water swimming is actually allowed, so somebody might be there to help you if you do get in trouble, so that actually people are aware that you're in the water, you know, because often we go to these places, they're isolated and people don't even know that anybody's in the water, let alone somebody being in trouble in the water.
Yeah, I think a couple of things for me there, Becky, from the stuff that you said. Number one, you know, we're dealing with a young lad that we've already described. You know, you didn't know he was going. Strong, fit, healthy lad. You know, you're right. Wasn't taught the dangers. I don't think I was ever taught the dangers when I was at school around open water. You know, so it was an educational thing. We don't all know everything. So I think you're being a bit harsh on yourself there from my own perspective, because, you know, you were dealing with a very, you know, common sense, intelligent lad. You know, you trusted him and you trusted him to make the right decisions in life. And ultimately, you can't be there 100% of the time. Hi, my name's Jim Nixon and I've been working in antisocial behaviour for a number of years. One of the big issues facing antisocial behaviour professionals is how we effectively tackle noise complaints, and you need good tools to be able to do this. One tool that I would highly recommend is the Noise app. I've effectively used the Noise app whilst working in the housing sector and the local authority sector, and for me it's the go-to tool. There's over 330 subscribing local authorities and housing associations in the UK currently using the Noise app. The Noise app was designed to relay precise information compared to traditional methods. I couldn't run an ASB team without the Noise app now. So if you want more information about the Noise app for a free trial, then contact the team on info@thenoiseapp.com today. We're raising awareness today around obviously people entering the water to swim. But I think the other thing that I wanted to pick up on and what you just said, particularly about the Polish people, is one of the things we want to raise awareness as well is that if you see someone in difficulty, our advice is not to jump in and try and save them, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's really, really hard for me to say. And I have to say it in every school presentation that I go in. And it's probably one of the hardest sentences that I say. Because obviously, had these Polish men realised Dylan was in trouble maybe 60 seconds early, that's what the man said to me. The man actually said to me, had I been able to get to your son 60 seconds earlier, I'd have saved his life. And I genuinely believe that. So it is really hard to say, don't go in and don't risk your life. But since losing Dylan, I've seen numerous times, and I don't just mean once or twice or as a one-off accident, I mean plenty of times where it's the person that goes in to rescue or to attempt the rescue that ends up losing their life, and the person that was initially in trouble managed to get out somehow, you know, and this is happening time and time and time again. So obviously our advice and everybody's advice is to not get in. My advice would be to first and foremost make sure you've got, what, 3 words downloaded to your phone. That'll give you a pinpoint location for emergency services to get to you as quickly as possible. I would say if you've got anything on you that's, that floats, I mean, you've got to think outside the box in these situations. So a football, a pop bottle, a branch off of a tree, your jacket could be used as kind of a throw line kind of thing. You know what, the main thing is to not put yourself into any danger. So if you're going to attempt to rescue, do it from the land, from the side of the water, and don't ever do it from a standing up position either. Do it where your whole body is laid flat on the floor. That way the person in difficulty in the water is less likely to pull you in, because let's remember, they're fighting for their life and the only thing they want to do is get out of that water. So that's another reason why we say do not get in the water, because one, if you do get in the water, the person that's in trouble would potentially try and use you to get out, which is obviously why you've got in. You've got in to try and rescue them, but they would use you to try and get out and potentially put you in danger, not even knowing it, so potentially cost you your life. And that happens time and time again.
Yeah, absolutely great advice that is, Becky. Just coming back to that app you just quickly mentioned, how would people, where would people find that?
So literally, if you, it's a free app, you just literally download, it's WHAT, WHAT, the number 3, and then words, WORDS. It's like a red background with 3 white stripes. And basically what that app's done is it has... it's basically dissected the whole world into 3 meter by 3 meter squares, and it's then given each 3 meter by 3 meter square a random 3 words. So, for instance, I could be sat here and my 3 words could be cow, biscuit, wall. I'd ring the police and say those 3 words and they would know exactly where I was, or the ambulance. But yeah, it's an absolutely fantastic app, and I wouldn't even just suggest it for water safety. It's good for hikers, walkers, bike riders, anybody that drives. If you was ever to have a car accident and be upside down in a ditch, this app would literally, it claims to be able to find a cow in a field, like that's how accurate it is. And honestly, it's amazing. I mean, I've got it downloaded to my phone and I just use it all the time just to see what the random 3 words are.
And that's free of charge, is it?
Yep, free of charge, so it doesn't cost you anything. I mean, some people, like my lad, my son, he's like, oh, what's the difference between that and Google Maps? And I'm like, well, I don't know what the difference is really. I just know that this app, literally, at a click of a button, will give me a random 3 words that will give my location to the police. I don't have to worry, or any emergency services. I don't have to worry about what road I came down, what corner I turned, what field I walked through, what water I passed, how many reservoirs there are in this area. Do you know what I mean?
That's absolutely brilliant, and I'm glad you've raised awareness about that, because I didn't know about that app, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners didn't know. So there you go, listeners, if you're interested in that app, I'd say it's well worth downloading it. Like Becky says, you know, it's not just about the open water, it's about all sorts of dangers that you may find yourself in. So definitely give that a look if you can, following the episode. Becky, one of the things we've picked up on as well, you just mentioned about people that are not so fortunate at getting out of these situations. When we spoke a couple of days ago, we were talking about statistics. Give the audience some real hardcore statistics about how many people are dying in the UK every year.
So it's been 10 years since losing Dylan, and in the UK alone, we've lost almost 7,000 people in that time. Almost 4,000 of those people are accidental deaths. We've lost 638 people last year in water-related incidents, and I think it was 231 that were accidental. I might be a couple out there, but I think that's about right. Sadly, every year we lose roughly 400 lives that are accidental. We then lose, on top of that, usually another 200 to 300 that are suicides or crime related. All these lives deserve to be remembered, including the suicides and the crime related, and I'm not going to ever shy away from talking about those as well. Some people tend to leave those statistics out like they don't matter. They do matter. Every death that we see matters. Every water related fatality that takes place is one that is preventable and that could have been stopped, and that is genuinely how I see all water-related fatalities. I'd say pretty much 99% of them are preventable, which makes what I do even more frustrating. Makes the campaigning even more frustrating, makes the news that I see every summer more frustrating. The fact that I have to relive my nightmare, relive the worst day of my life over and over and over and over and over again. And you know what? Even now, 10 years on, people will still say that's the first time I've ever heard your story. So I know that I have to keep continuing to do this.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that you contacted me, Becky, because I'll be honest with you, you know, I'm dealing with a lot of community safety issues, but when you contacted me, I just realised that we had to cover this, because, you know, 7,000 deaths, that is massive. You know, one death is too many for me.
Yeah.
You know, you look at just Dylan's death, and the amount of people that have been affected by his death alone, and times that by 7,000,
yeah,
that is crazy, isn't
yeah.
it?
Exactly. And you know what, cold hard stats, they can say what you want them to say, we can make them say what we want them to say, but ultimately that's 7,000 families torn to pieces. You know, if we can prevent one life from being lost, then this podcast was worth doing. If we can get one family to listen up, make a different choice, or teach their loved ones about the dangers, then, you know, the tears have been worth crying. You know, at the end of the day, I'll continue to keep doing what I'm doing, and I'll continue to keep trying to raise awareness as much as possible and in as many places as possible. And as much as you're thankful for having me on the show, I'm thankful that you're interested. You know, more people die in water than fires every single year. More people die in water than in cycling related incidents every single year. And around about 50% of the lives that we lose accidentally were people that never intended on getting wet. So they never went out for a swim, they never went out to go in the water. They might have been going for a dog walk and the dog's gone in the water and they've gone in after the dog. They might have been going out for a bike ride and they fell in a canal off the bike. They might have been going on a night out with the lads and getting absolutely smashed and thinking that walk by the river will take me 5 minutes less than that walk around, I don't know, you know, the underground or whatever. And sometimes that one action has massive consequences. And I suppose that's one of the things that I'm trying my hardest to get out, is that your actions have consequences. You know, plan your night home before you go out. When you're sober, plan how you're going to get home, book your taxi, or ask which friends are going to go out with you. You know, if you're going to go to the beach, make sure your kids are in reach, make sure you're not messing about on your phone. If you make sure your kids know about beach flags, you know, the amount of times I go into schools and universities and our children and our adults don't know the three basic beach flags that are out there. You know, three, we've got a red one that's pretty much speaks for itself, no swimming. Lifeguards looked at the water and decided, you know, that's not for swimming in. Got the black and white one, that means water sports is going on, again no swimming. The only place you should safely swim in open water is between the two red and yellow flags on a lifeguarded beach. And the reason for that is because the lifeguard is in the center of those two flags pretty much, so that's his or her best vision is between those two red and yellow flags. And pretty much if you go to anywhere that's got a lifeguard, you're not going to lose your life, you know, because that place has been set up for swimming. And my motto is really, really simple: no lifeguard, no swimming. And I think if people followed that motto, we'd see a lot less deaths. You know, in the last heat wave that we just had in July, so between the 14th of July and the 28th of July, we lost over 40 lives, 40 lives in the UK alone. So hopefully when this podcast goes out, if it is in the middle of a heat wave, hopefully it will prevent some of those needless deaths. I was doing news reports like literally three a week on the same TV programme. I went on BBC three times in 1 week. I went on ITV twice in 1 week. The WHO The World Health Organization on the 28th of April this year finally decided that we have got a global issue where drowning is concerned. They finally agreed that we've got a problem, not just nationally in the UK, but globally in the whole world. Now we lose about 320,000 to 350,000 people worldwide, and some of those deaths are so easily preventable, i.e. drain covers in third world countries. I'm sure you can understand how in third world countries and more deprived areas we see a lot more drownings, but we still have our part to play in our country. We're still losing too many lives. Like you've already said, one loss is one loss too many. We can't continue to see this. And on top of just the tragic events and the people that are affected, there is a cost that comes with this. You know, not a lot of people will talk about this because, you know, it's kind of irrelevant. I've lost a child, and the cost of me losing a child to everybody else is probably quite irrelevant. But actually, when I've asked around and asked people, how much did it cost for my son to die that day? Cost about £1 million.
Yeah.
£1 million for my son to die. How much would it have cost to prevent his death?
Yeah, nothing. So true. And I'll tell you what's really alarming for me, Becky, and I'm glad you've raised this, is, you know, in such a short period of time during the month of July, 40 people. I'm astounded by that. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
That's a crazy amount of lives to lose in such a short period of time. And it really does highlight, you know, that we've got to keep pushing awareness about this to save more and more lives.
Yeah, because as much as we've seen 40 tragedies over that 14 days, I'm also as sure as what I possibly can ever be that we must have saved lives over them days as well. There must have been some people that listened to my pleas and listened to other parents' pleas and listened to the fire services' pleas and the police's pleas. And had the parents saying, no, you're not going to do this, and no, you're not going to do that, you know, we must have prevented the loss of some lives. So if it wasn't for people like myself and other mums and other families, we would see a lot more deaths. And if it wasn't for people like the RNLI, independent lifeboats, coast guards, our fire service, you know, we would, and even police officers, we would be seeing so many more tragedies than what we're already seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. You've covered a lot there, Becky. And obviously, I think the one great piece of advice you gave there was, if there ain't a lifeguard, don't swim. And I think that's a really, really key piece. But is there anything else that you want to raise that maybe people aren't doing? You know, you've already given some great advice, but is there anything else that you want to raise whilst you've got the opportunity?
Really, what I'd say to parents is, please make that time to have these conversations with your children. Even if you don't think it's worthwhile, what have you got to lose? Like, literally, what have you got to lose? Because I lost the most precious thing in my life, which was my firstborn son. And I wish I knew then what I know now. And if I did, things would be very different. So please, to parents, make the time, educate yourselves a little bit. There's really not that much out there to educate yourselves on that would actually save your life. Then I would say to teenagers, don't give in to that peer pressure. When your mates are daring you to jump in that water, you know, it's not worth the risk. I dare you not to jump in that water. So now you've got a choice to make. To young people, I would say never, ever, ever go near any open water unless you're with adults. And I'm not even talking getting into water there. I'm talking about going near any open water. As I've already said, 50% or thereabouts of people lose their life where they didn't intend on getting wet. And some of those were children, you know, sadly. I think as well, I would say that it's really important that we understand as a country that we are just about teaching our children enough to kill themselves at the moment. We're teaching them how to swim, and that is about it. We're not teaching them about the dangers in and around open water. Some people out there will think that water safety is already mandatory on the national curriculum. Sadly, it isn't. We do teach swimming. We're supposed to teach teaching children to swim a minimum of 25 metres and to self-rescue from two different water-based situations. However, we're failing to teach around about a quarter, at least between a quarter and a half of those children are leaving school unable to swim the 25 metres. On top of that, we're also having the people, the two water-based self-rescue that they talk about doing, that they do in schools now, is basically so you rescue yourself from a swimming pool that's nice and warm and sanitised and lifeguarded and you've got your swimming costume on, or you rescue yourself from a nice, warm, sanitised, lifeguarded swimming pool with your pyjamas on. And I'm sorry, that does not give you anything to prepare yourself if you was to fall in open water. I think learning to swim in open water is a definite skill set that's required. And I think that if you look at it like this, if you learn to drive a car, that doesn't necessarily give you the skill set to drive a Formula One car around a Formula One track. You need different skills, and it's the exact same where water safety is concerned. Just because you can swim in a nice, warm, sanitised swimming pool that's lifeguarded, temperature controlled and clean, that does not give you the skill set to be able to swim in any body of open water. When I say a body of open water, I mean canal, river, reservoir, quarry, lake, you name it, any of them. And also, one last thing I'd just like to raise is that quite often swift water rescuers, the people that would come to your aid, will, are they not on our doorsteps? Quite often they can be 20 minutes away. So if you do end up in trouble in open water, the chances of survival become very slim very quickly. I would also say, if you do end up in open water and you do have the chance, don't panic. Get on your back and try and float to live. Don't try and swim straight away. If you're to fall in open water, it's a very scary experience. And if you can try, and control your breathing, get on your back, clear your airways, the chances are these feelings will pass in a couple of minutes, and potentially you should be able to get out. One more thing: never, ever, ever swim against a riptide, because you are not strong enough. Even the strongest of swimmers are caught out with riptides. Even Olympic swimmers can't swim against riptides. And if you want to find out any more information about water safety, or want to follow my journey in any way, shape or form, feel free to go on Doing It For Dylan or at Miss My Baby Boy on Twitter. I'm sure the podcast is going to go out, and hopefully people take heed of the warnings and we see a lot less water-related fatalities this year. That's all I can do, is keep trying.
Fantastic amount of information there, Becky. I didn't want to disturb you when you're going through that, because I thought you gave some amazing advice there to our audience. I know we will save lives by this episode. I know it. We will get, you know, a large number of listeners to this particular episode, and we will definitely save lives. So, you know, I can't thank you enough for sharing your journey, your story, and for being so honest with me today, because we are going to help a lot of people here. Is there a Facebook group as well? I'm pretty sure I saw one earlier. Yeah. Is that?
Doing It For Dylan on Facebook. Yes, you can find me on there. And you can obviously find me under Rebecca Ramsey on my personal page. I'm pretty easy to find, I think. I think I've gone out there now and I've done that much. You literally just Google my name and, yeah, you can find me. There's lots of videos out there as well for young people. If you've got a teenager that doesn't listen to you and is telling you, you know what, Mum, I'm going swimming in that quarry, or I'm going swimming in that reservoir, I've got a few hard-hitting videos that once you've shown them to your teenagers, they might make a different choice. So please feel free to get in touch. And if that won't work, I'm happy to have a chat with your teenager.
That is really lovely to say that, Becky. And you're right. I actually watched one of your YouTube videos the other day where you actually go back to the quarry and you talk about Dylan's death. And I'll tell you what, it's really hard hitting. So, audience, if you want to get your children to actually, you know, get the message, then take Becky up on her advice, because there are some great, there's some great videos out there that will really, really sort of get the message across. Becky, we're coming to the end now. Is there anything that I haven't asked you today that you wanted to cover before we wrap up?
No, I think we've covered everything. I think one last little thing, maybe. If
go
there's,
for it.
It, just because I've spoke quite a lot of about to. And given a lot of advice to teenagers and older kids, just for the little ones out there, so your nursery kind of age kids or very early primary school age kids, there is a song out by RNLI at the minute, and it teaches you how to float like a starfish if you get into trouble. Now, I've had my twin nieces here for the past 2 weeks, and I have literally watch them play this song on repeat. It's literally only about two lines long, so parents, just be warned, you will get fed up of it, but it potentially could save your child's life. I mean, I've watched my twin nieces literally, and when I say this, I mean literally, tell me that they wanted to send this song to mum, to dad, to sister. They wanted to teach the nursery friends it. They wanted to teach the school friends it. They've taught half of Glasgow water safety. I'm out of a job up there.
So where do we find that?
Just go on to RNLI and just literally Google RNLI starfish song, and it comes up. And it, like I say, I think it's 30 seconds long. So when you're on your way to the beach, have that on repeat, and then they'll know exactly
Brilliant.
What to do.
I absolutely love that, yeah. So there you go. Listeners, another tip in terms of a bit more awareness, particularly our younger children as well, which is fantastic advice as well.
I know, Becky, I've said this a million times. One last thing. Please, sorry. If you go to the beach, which is generally where we usually tend to introduce our families to open water for the first time, please go and speak to the lifeguards on the beach. Check the tide times. Be aware that we do have two tides, and be aware that you can very, very easily get cut off. And quite often, even the most experienced of people can get cut off, just going on a dog walk, losing track of time or whatever. So just be aware when you're near open water, follow the safe code, stay away from the edges. And I'm very sorry for keep saying I've got one more thing. I've no more things now.
Do you know what though, Becky, the significant thing about that is that one more thing could save a life. So I'm not gonna say, sorry, you can't say that again, because everything you've said today has been absolutely spot on, brilliant advice. And as I said earlier, we will save lives because of this, and that's what we're all about on this podcast. So talk away all you like, because this is fantastic, and we need to raise more awareness. And the other thing I want to say to you personally before you go is I'm in awe of what you're doing, and I tell you what, your son will be absolutely proud of what you do, because you are spreading this message and you are saving so many lives across the UK and probably across the world. So just be proud of what you're achieving. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you to our listeners again today. I think we've had an absolutely brilliant interview today with Becky. Please take notice of the advice that we're giving you, because we really, really want to get this message across. Thank you again for supporting the podcast. Please subscribe, rate and review the Community Safety Podcast. We really want to get our message across to as many people as possible. So tell your friends, tell your colleagues. And we'll catch you on the next episode. I think this is one of the most important episodes that we've put out on the Community Safety Podcast. I was really taken back by some of the statistics that Becky talked about. It's a really, really sad story about what happened to Dylan. And I'm just pleased that Becky is now turning their attention to raising awareness and saving as many lives as possible. And I hope that by broadcasting this podcast that we will save some lives too, and we will continue to work with Becky and raise awareness of this really important subject. Thank you again for listening to the Community Safety Podcast. We really do appreciate your support. Please rate, subscribe and review the podcast. Please tell your friends, please tell your colleagues. We really want to raise awareness about this important subject. We want to transform communities and we want to save lives. And we'll catch you on the next episode.
You've been listening to the Community Safety Podcast. Community Safety Podcast. with thanks for support from St Ives Chambers, RHE Global and Me Learning. Join us again next time to help us explore how we can transform our communities in the 21st century on the Community Safety Podcast with Jim Nixon.